This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio here on NPR One.
Knoxville, the third largest city in Tennessee, is most definitely a big little city. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for an exploration of cool things to do and see. We'll stop in for a visit with Angie Wilson at Visit Knoxville. Carol Evans shares insights about the city's amazing urban wilderness adventures for hikers, bikers, and kayakers. Sam Carlton at the four-star Tennessean Hotel talks about the Knoxville World's Fair back in 1982 and how the momentum instilled by the fair continues today. Tom Bug, general manager at the city's two historic theaters, the Tennessee and the Bijou, paints a vivid picture of Knoxville's past and present and how the renovation of the theater served as an economic stimulus. David Butler is executive director at the Knoxville Museum of Art. He talks about community engagement through showcasing regional art, educational outreach, and gratis admission. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee. Come along and join me for a visit with Angie Wilson, the Senior Director of Marketing for Visit Knoxville, and we are visiting.
Yes, you are. We're so glad you're visiting, Tom. I hope you're enjoying your stay here in Knoxville.
I'm still kind of in a state of shock.
We hear that a lot.
It's hard to imagine ahead of time. Looking in from the outside, my bias was Knoxville was a pretty small town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the pleasant paradox. It is a small town.
Yes.
And that's what part of the magic is. And yet it's a big city in a lot of ways.
It is.
So you guys kind of beaten the system so far.
We like to think so. We kind of say we're just big enough and just small enough to really accommodate a lot of experiences and still keep that authenticity and just to be genuine and friendly folk. There's so much to do here, but you don't feel like you're spread out all over town doing it.
And the acid test of finding out how friendly a town is to take a walkabout in the evening, in the night, and in the morning. And I walked across town last night, music festival, back
yes.
to the hotel, and it was magical. It was cute. I mean, the people out on the sidewalk in front of the restaurants and cafes and
yes.
bars having fun, and it just felt like you were in a vibrant small town.
You've used all the key words that we use when we talk about this place. Vibrant, big, small, walkable, surprising. You've pretty much experienced Knoxville within a short period of time and gotten a really good taste of what it's like here.
Yeah, you immediately go, I could live here.
We hear
yeah.
that a lot, too.
Yeah.
A whole lot of people have said that. It's funny, about 5-6 years ago, we partnered with the Chamber. And so our visitor's guide is actually a flip book that's a relocation guide.
Realtors like that.
Oh, realtors love it. You know, we did it from a strategic point of making sure we're putting out consistent information mm-hmm. on the most updated restaurant information and the number of hotel rooms. But it has really served its purpose that people who come here are interested in living here, so it gives them the information. And the people who are planning to move here automatically have information on all the wonderful things there are to do in Knoxville.
First-time visitor already has a baseline of what they think they want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They do.
And I think one of the other disconnects is a lot of people don't remember and don't realize that the World's Fair was in Knoxville.
82.
And
it's funny, I'm looking over your shoulder at a picture of the Sun Sphere right behind you. And yeah, it still stands today. So
yeah.
82 World's Fair. I was a young middle school kid at that point. I have actually very fond memories of being here at the fair. And the two remaining structures are that Sun Sphere and the amphitheater where opening ceremonies were held and President Reagan was there and lots of amazing performances from around the world.
You guys pulled off a coup and must have pissed off a lot of other cities around America.
When it happened.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I don't know if you walked around Market Square last night, but there's a reference and it's kind of a mantra for this town that's based on that World's Fair because the Wall Street Journal, one of their writers had actually come out with a story ahead of the fair that said, how is a scruffy little city like Knoxville going to pull off a World's Fair? And it was like fuel to the fire. And so Knoxville pulled off one of the last successful World's Fair. And today, when you walk around town, you'll see scruffy city strong kind of, you know, mantras around the city.
The locals
mottos.
Embraced it
oh,
and loved
totally
it.
Embraced it. There's a music hall on Market Square that is Scruffy City Hall. And so just kind of a, you know, pull up by the bootstraps kind of city and pulled off a pretty cool event. Mm-hmm. And we still do that today. I mean, we surprise people with pulling off events.
Sam Carlton, Assistant General Manager at the Tennessean. Let's talk about the World's Fair. It took place here, what, in the 80s?
1982. And the Tennessean, the hotel that we're in right now, it was built for the 1982 World's Fair. We overlook the World's Fair Park Lawn, which is where all of the events would take place and ceremonies. The building we are in now was originally built to house the dignitaries and the ambassadors of the foreign nations that were here to take place. After the World's Fair, it turned into the state and federal office buildings.
Oh, interesting.
After it was state and federal buildings, then it just went unused for a number of years, and then a local Knoxvillian, Nicholas Kazana, he purchased the building from the city and then did a full renovation, and he wanted it to be all about Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's back up to the World's Fair for a moment, because World's Fairs historically in America have served as a showcase, an economic stimulus for a community, and that's the why it came to Knoxville back in the day.
That is correct. So originally they go to the larger cities. You know, you go to Chicago, New York. When they chose Knoxville, the focal point was in the rural parts, getting into the outsource of the outer stretches of the larger cities. Yes, it was a huge stimulus, and still to this day, it's a huge stimulus for it. As you look right outside of our windows on our City View rooms, you will see the Sun Sphere. The Sun Sphere was built for the World's Fair. You can still go up there today, learn about it, as well as overlook the city of Knoxville.
Real quick overview of the Tennessean and what is here. Do you have an on-site restaurant and bar and meeting facilities? It's a real multi-use destination, isn't it?
Yes, the Tennessean Hotel and residences. So we actually have 12 residences that are on the top two floors.
Do people lease or own or rent? How does that
work?
They
do both. We have 82 rooms. We have an executive boardroom.
How about sourcing and showcasing Tennessee products? I assume that's integral to the restaurant.
Absolutely. So our chef, he'll take his team down to the farmer's market, which is down in Market Square. All of the farmer's market vendors are out there on the Saturday mornings. And he will go and pick through the items and talk with the local purveyors and the vendors out there and decide what he is going to use for his weekly inspirations. And that has really, really been a phenomenal take inside of our restaurant.
And the name of the restaurant?
It's called The Drawing Room. We have many, many locals who do come in, as well as many different individuals who are staying in other hotels that just want that high-end, elevated service.
So it goes without saying, this is an anniversary destination restaurant.
100%. We've got one of the largest and most specific variations when it comes to bourbon selections. Very high-end things that you can't get anywhere else. It's like Boss Hog from Whistle Pig.
So let's talk about the economic vitality of Knoxville. There's a lot happening, a lot coming online, and a lot of creative talent.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they've done a fantastic job with the revitalization of downtown. We got Market Square, high-end chefs, so James Beard Award-winning chefs down there that came from Blackberry to start their own, Knox Mason, Amelia's, J.C. Holdway. So revitalization of Market Square has been fantastic. There's also the increase of the national growing phase when it comes to craft beer and the distilleries. They've done an amazing job of doing that. We've got, you know, Postmodern Distillery. You've got Elkmont Exchange Brewery. You've got Pretentious Beer downtown. They've done a great job. There's also the heightened sense of the arts scene. We have Pretentious Glass that blows their own glass downtown. During the farmers markets on Saturday, you'll see all of the crafts and the guild work that they have. So they've done a really great job of bringing that sense of revitalization.
And then in manufacturing, this is a whole reinvention in itself. You have an incredible aircraft manufacturer that's based here.
Absolutely. It's Cirrus Aircraft, so they've got their manufacturing here and their training here, so that's a huge boost. We've also have Discovery, which is located here in Knoxville.
The Discovery Channel.
The Discovery Channel, that is correct. We also have H.T. Hackney Furniture Manufacturing, and the fun thing about that is they've actually built all of our furniture that is inside of the hotel, so it is very local and very Tennessee for us. The owner would go out to the manufacturing plant, which is about 30 miles away, to see everything. But when we got all of the furniture and we put everything inside of the rooms, he has his own transportation company, and he sent out his charter buses, loaded up all of the manufacturers that were building it, and brought them all to the hotel to tour and see the finished product and how it looked.
That's really cool. And speaking of buses, as I travel around Hawaii, Asia, Europe, you see these Van Hool buses, big tour buses. Dan, I learned there's a local connection. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. They just announced that they're going to be building a manufacturing plant that's going to be right up the road, about an hour away. That'll be in, I believe it's Morristown.
So they're going to be building buses here for the world market.
That is correct. It's very exciting.
That's really cool. And that's extraordinarily exciting for parents that live here that are concerned about their kids being able to stay in the area.
Well, that's where the Tennessee Promise comes into play. They really, truly have been going after the manufacturers and getting some businesses inside of this town that can really bring that economic strong point to this city. So they are being able to provide the Tennessee Promise to create that workforce, that labor force that will be able to provide and stay here in Knoxville.
Very cool. We've been visiting with Sam Carlton, Assistant General Manager at the Tennessean.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
A few weeks ago, we had Bassmaster Classic here.
Wow.
And it was, to their credit, they tell us it was the most successful Bassmaster in 49 years.
Holy cow.
They had more people than ever here at the event.
It was on the river? Or?
Yes, and that was one of the benefits. The anglers actually took off right there on the Tennessee River. You've already seen how close we are to downtown to the river. They took off from there, and the weigh-ins were at Thompson Bowling Arena, and the expo was at the Knoxville Convention Center. And again, that's all walkable. So fans, and I never realized what fans were like for Bassmaster. They stood in line for those anglers the way I would for Peyton Manning. I mean, it was amazing.
Yep.
They were able to walk to all those things and actually watch those anglers take off, which normally doesn't happen. They're usually about an hour outside of town.
Interesting. So that's a home run. I bet they're coming back.
They've already said they want to come back. It was great for the fans and for the anglers to have everything right here together.
You hit it on the head of what I've perceived so far, is that diversity of people with a myriad of interests.
Yes.
There could be people that don't care anything about fishing and yet would still love the water world here.
Yes. The activities on the water. This is the head of the Tennessee River. So the French Broad and the Holston come together right north of us a little bit, south of us a little bit. Depends on, I guess, which way you're sitting.
Up or down.
You're up or down. Yeah. And the water activity here, paddleboarding, kayaking, fishing, there's fly fishing upstream. There was some of the best bass fishing, they said, ever, about 50 miles, you know, radius from here. You could just want to be on the water boating or just hanging out, taking a stroll down the greenway that runs right next to the water.
You were talking earlier to somebody about people going out on a night paddle.
Yes.
Tonight on the river.
Yes, so we've got a couple of partners.
Do you give them flashlights?
They put them on the boards, actually. It's kind of interesting, yeah. So stand-up paddle boarding is kind of all the rage. And you can do it here in a couple of places, including Meade's Quarry, which is over in our urban wilderness, but also on the Tennessee River. And it's something else to be just paddling alongside a big city, and you've got Neyland Stadium in your sights, and it's quite a view, and under those historic bridges. But they'll do that tonight on the water. And if you come to town and don't have equipment, you can rent it here. It's not a problem.
Very, very cool. And I think you touched on another key element that makes Knoxville what it is, and that's it's a university town.
It is, yes. I'm a UT grad, so I'm always proud to talk about it.
A little biased there.
I'm a little biased. Yeah. It's a great campus. It continues to expand and grow. It brings a number of people here, not just for sports, obviously, but, you know, every year there's a new crop of students starting whose parents want to come over here and check out the town. And we are a college town, but we've grown into so much more because it used to be college sustained us in the fall with football. This past year, basketball was all the rage for the Vols. But we don't just have to rely on the scene with sports anymore for fall because there's festivals and everything that carries us through. But that's also the diversity of the population here, which is really nice, too, is based on the university.
And I think that what I find, I live in a university town. Mm-hmm. And wherever you go around America, those towns that have even a technical school or a college or a university are different than those that don't. They are missing this energy and buzz. And
it's a great way to describe it. And, you know, we're just 40 miles, roughly, from Oak Ridge as well. So the ORNL and all of the, you know, engineers and scientists there also creates a really interesting, we call it a corridor here, the Innovation Valley, that brings a good mix of, I think, energy, the way you said it, is the way to describe it, to the city.
And that probably explains, talking to locals there, heads are spinning right now relative to the number of new trendy diners and eateries that have opened up in the last, they were telling me, the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like this, they can't even explain why or how, but it's like this viral explosion going on right now.
The food scene here is getting a ton of attention, and it really kind of runs the gamut with traditional Southern fare, then there's this Southern fare with a twist, and then there's any variation of multicultural offerings around this city. We have French cuisine, we have Mediterranean, we have Vietnamese that just opened. Of course, then you have Italian, and you have all kinds of cultural experiences here, but there's some really unique stories here, too. Yassine's Falafel House was voted friendliest place in America last year by Reader's Digest readers.
Wow.
They announced that.
I went there about a week ago.
And he is a phenomenal story. I mean, he's a Syrian refugee. Mm-hmm. He has just energized in this city as well. It's just a very welcoming city for all kinds of cultures and visitors. Has been a great story.
And that's really touching in Knoxville, you know, because this is not a comfortable subject. But as recently as the early 1960s, your theater downtown was segregated.
Yes.
I mean, how many light years have we evolved here?
Exactly.
In one big generation.
Right.
That's so cool.
It's hard to believe that we're still in, even in my generation, that it's a timeline that you can reference.
And you can remember and see that evolution.
Right.
And going in the right direction.
Exactly. There's a lot of that history here. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. visited Knoxville during, you know, during a lot of his high point, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. We could talk on a whole other, there's people I would bring to the table to tell you about some of the stories here. Mm-hmm. It's a rich history. It has its sad points and things we hate that happened here, but then there's also some real positive things that came out of that time period for Knoxville. Even the Coliseum, when it opened, Bob Booker, who is a fantastic historian here, who remembers what it was like to be turned away at doors and different things, when the Knoxville Coliseum and Auditorium was opening in the early 60s, he called to ask where the different entrances would be, what the policy would be, and they said, no, we're opening integrated.
How cool.
And so there's some positive things that happened here as well.
And again, that's prehistoric times relative to today.
Right.
Yeah. It's very touching. The bottom line of this town is it's kind of like you can't quite absorb it, is the friendliness of it. Mm-hmm. Wherever you go, whatever street. I mean, we were trying to find the Blues Festival last night, and this couple said, well, we'll walk you there.
It happens. <Yeah. laughs> Really, it's so funny. Down in that same area you were in for the music festival, Pretentious Glass, Ollie B, there's a number of various businesses that are out on that street. And just the other day, Matthew Cummings with Pretentious Glass told me, he said, this is a grown-up Sesame Street. He said, we come out every morning and we greet each other and we're like, hey, here comes the baker.
Cute.
Here comes the, you know, here comes the artist. And
nailed it.
It is. It's nailed an adult it. Sesame Street. So it's
that's so touching.
It's a great town. I love being here. I grew up here, and I don't think there's been a better time to live and visit the city.
And what's really cool, trust me, there are some towns where CVBs and chambers have to scratch their head. How are we going to try and market this place?
Right.
You know, and they're just a stretch. You guys don't have to do anything.
Well, I'm glad you think that.
Well, I know that.
So
we haven't even talked about urban hiking.
I know. We've got a lot to talk about. Yeah. We really do. The thing is, a lot of people ask us, what's your one big thing? We don't have one big thing. It's kind of like, well, what do you want your one thing to be? And we'll tell you how to do it in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. And the selling point usually is that you're going to be able to do your one big thing. But because we're so walkable, accessible, that you're going to do your one big thing and then tack on something else while you're here and decide, I'm going to need some more time.
Yeah. Let's say you had enough time. Mm-hmm. You could use Knoxville as a base camp for day trips some incredible world-class places within half a day's drive to get there. Give us an example of some of the must-dos.
East Tennessee, just in general. I mean, if you came into Bristol and did the birthplace of country music, you continue your story here. You come here, you just came from the Blue Plate Special downstairs with WDVX. The music story continued here. It kind of migrated toward Nashville, and there's some music history and historians that will tell you we should have held on to it, but, like everything else, it expanded west. So you could do Bristol. You could do Nashville. I mean, and Nashville has an international airport, so literally your options are endless when you talk about planning trips. You're 3 hours from Atlanta. You're 3 hours from Lexington.
And Cumberland.
Yes. You're an hour and a half from Asheville. So
that's a whole nother state.
So if you're planning to be in the region at all, and if you're driving especially, we've really promoted for the past several years that we're within a day's drive of around half the population. But we've got a lot of good, direct flights and things like that as well. So if you plan to be in the area, we've been a drive-by town, a drive-through town for a number of years. We're on this 75 and 40 intersection, so north to south, the snowbirds come through here, and they're starting to figure it out.
Well, you're a lot further ahead than the flyover states.
That's a great song. It's such a great song. Yeah. I agree. It's definitely a city to stop and spend some time in.
That's so cool. So if somebody wanted to learn more, where do you drive them to? Facebook?
Yes, follow us on social media. Our website has a ton of information, blogs, if people are into blogging. We have a podcast on there as well called Why Knox that a lot of locals actually tell why they love being here and tell their stories. So that's visitknoxville.com. If you're in the area, Visit Knoxville app is pretty nice too. It has some things different than the website. It has some itineraries like what to do in a day, what to do in a few days, tons of information. Then just reach out to us. We'll help you plan a trip.
Well, the only problem is I'm here and I don't want to go home.
You come back.
I have to go tomorrow.
You come back anytime, and we will set an agenda, and you can do all the things you didn't get to do this time.
Talking to the locals downtown, they described Knoxville downtown 20 years ago. That was basically a ghost town after 5 p.m., literally.
Totally a ghost town. I mentioned earlier that I was a UT student, and we didn't come downtown. Mm-hmm. There was nothing to do here. And my daughter, who is a rising junior at UT, when we went for her orientation, that was all they talked about to parents and students was, you're right here at downtown, you've got a ton of food offerings. I don't know if I mentioned, there's more than 80 restaurants within a square mile of downtown. They're talking about the urban wilderness, which is 1,000 acres of protected land with 50 hiking and biking trails within city limits. It's literally a few minutes across the bridge over the river. So it's changed a lot. And it's changed even in the past 5 years. I think you were at the Tennessee Theater this morning. And a lot of people reference that revitalization and saving the Tennessee Theater as the catalyst for downtown development.
Got the ball rolling.
Yes. Yeah. Investors and community alike saw, okay, if people are going to put millions of dollars into this historic Tennessee Theater, what does that mean for downtown?
Tom Bug, B-U-G-G, and I'm the general manager, the Bijou and the Tennessee Theater.
So in the heart of downtown Knoxville, the Bijou and this theater are the two seminal theaters, classic theaters.
Yeah, for sure. Both are different, but they complement each other.
Let's go back in time and talk about the Bijou for a moment, because that goes way back.
Yeah, so the original building of the Bijou's Lamar House opened as a hotel in Knoxville in 1817. It's the third oldest building still standing, the oldest commercial building still
and
standing.
And that the structural bones of that are still part of the structure?
Structural bones are still part of that structure. Mm-hmm. As being in charge of maintenance, you're aware of that all the time. The whole basic footprint of the hotel and the theater are the same footprint it was 200 years ago.
So it started as a hotel?
Started as a hotel.
And then during the Civil War, it played an important role in the battle here in Knoxville.
Well, there's two things that happened during the Civil War. First, the first shots of the Civil War in Knoxville were shot out of that building. There was Confederate officers in the hotel, and there was a Unionist outside with a drum, banging the drum, kind of taunting them. And one of the Confederate officers got tired of it and shot and killed the guy. And then General William Sanders, who was a Union general, was wounded on the Battle of Knoxville on Kingston Pike in 1863. And he was brought to the hotel. It was being used as a hospital, and he actually died in the hotel. And he was so popular with his men that they took him out under the cover of darkness and buried him in the Church Street Cemetery so that his troops would not know that he had died.
Mm-hmm. 100 years later, almost, 90-some years later, somebody decided to repurpose the building primarily as a theater.
Yeah, so there was a developer in town, and the hotel was getting close to 100 years old, 90 years old, and it was no longer the premier hotel in Knoxville. It had gone through several ownership management changes, and it was no longer so like good developers do. So what can we do to make this property pay for itself? So they repurposed the footprint of it and opened the BG Theater.
And those were silent movies primarily?
Actually, it was originally started as a vaudeville house. Okay. It's live entertainment.
So the vaudeville circuit literally come here?
The vaudeville circuit would literally come, and there was several. There's Keith Vaudeville, Perducci Vaudeville, but all came around. The Marx Brothers played here during that time period on the vaudeville circuit.
Around the time of talkies, vaudeville kind of died, didn't it?
Right, correct. So here, when the Tennessee was being built, they closed the Bijou. It was actually the same developer. Mm-hmm. So the Bijou, for 5 years, could not do a theatrical performance. So they took all the seats out and made it a used car storage lot in the auditorium, and the foyer out front was a fruit stand.
So again, the Tennessee became the go-to place for movies, a movie palace. What, 1929 it opened?
1928. First 1928. As all the movie palaces were big built across the country, they were built as a fantasy world. You come through the doors and there's the five chandeliers and you're like, wow, what a beautiful place.
In a grand, opulent space, very high ceilings. For a little kid growing up around Knoxville then, that must have been wow.
Yeah, I think
like going to Disneyland.
Yeah, I think going to Disneyland and just having that whole experience was incredible. And so, but the Tennessee opened up was originally designed to be silent films, and they had a Wurlitzer organ to play with that. But as technology goes, the talkies came in, and there was no need for the Wurlitzer anymore. So they used it as part of the vaudeville. The films were 20, 30 minutes long at that point in time. So you had a vaudeville comedian, somebody play the organ, and then you show the feature film.
It's a miracle, actually, that the Tennessee Theater did survive, because as we both know painfully well, across America, these grand movie palaces during and subsequent to the Depression just oftentimes died because of a shift in where we went for entertainment.
Absolutely. It's amazing to me that, something as big as us, we've got over 1,600 seats, that it could still manage to, but then it was different back then because films only played 2 or 3, 4 days.
Mm-hmm. And then moved on.
And then moved on. Yeah. And actually when the Bijou reopened, that's where the second run films went, was mm-hmm. to the Bijou as well.
So kind of an art theater, yeah. art house.
Yeah. And so it's
The 70s, kind of the shift in America with malls and whatnot, that was a real death knell, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. When the mall opened in Knoxville, all the department stores went away from downtown.
And then they would build the multiplex theaters.
Yeah, and they built the theaters. And so downtown was no longer the hub of business. It was at the, or retail business. It was at, so you went to lunch at the cafeteria and you went and bought your clothes or whatever. Everything was at the mall centric. Mm-hmm.
So 20 years ago, downtown Knoxville was a ghost town.
Pretty much. At 5 o'clock, the exit started. By 6, it was pretty much a ghost town. Bay Street, there was 2 restaurants that were open. One of them closed at 8 o'clock.
I walked down this street out front at 10:30 last night, and it was vibrant and hopping and incredible.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. Even at 2 o'clock in the morning, on occasion we walk out of here that late, mm-hmm. There's still people all around walking down. And so.
And you have the restaurant venues and the bars that have the little sidewalk seating, so they're out front.
Yeah.
Back to the Tennessee, because this is an incredible movie palace that's been a major restoration.
Correct. In 2003, we closed for a year and a half, did a $30 million renovation to restore it to where it was, but also to make improvements. As we discussed earlier, they knocked down the whole stage house. It was built as a vaudeville house movie palace, and it was only 22 feet from the lip of the stage to the back wall. Now I've got 45 feet.
And you had to do that for your off-Broadway productions, or they wouldn't have been able to perform, right?
Well, even rock shows, even the symphony. The symphony used to play before the renovation. They were in 2 separate rooms. The strings and the conductor were out front in front of the proscenium, and everything was behind the producer. So there was playing in 2 separate rooms.
That'd be tough for a conductor, huh?
I think it's tough for everyone because you're not hearing the same thing. So.
Okay, so the Tennessee Theater reinvented. What drives it today? It's not just movies by any means.
No, we do a few films a year. We do a summer film series, which is basically classic films. We do some films around Christmas, which is always popular. But no, we are the home of the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra, the home of the Knoxville Opera. We have a Broadway series where we have 6 different Broadway plays a year come in. And then we also do concerts, comedy. The Knoxville Jazz Orchestra does our Christmas performance here. We do a little bit of dance.
So what you're describing is the old classic Tennessee movie palace has been reinvented as the performing arts center for the whole region, more than just the city.
Yeah, for Upper East Tennessee, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah, we're amazed that people come from 2, 3, 4 hours away mm-hmm. to see a show here. It's great to see that people are finding that Knoxville has a lot to offer.
So in Eastern Tennessee, this is the palace.
This is the palace, yeah.
So you'd have to go all the way over to Chattanooga or to Nashville to find anything similar.
Yeah, and I'm prejudiced, so I don't think there's anything similar in Nashville or Chattanooga. But this is definitely a wonderful experience. And the Bijou and the Tennessee, they're such a complement to each other. We've watched a lot of artists over the years that, have played the Bijou as they're coming up, and then they've played the Tennessee, and a lot of them have gone on to mm-hmm. play, to play the arenas and stuff. So that's really cool to watch, too.
Yeah, the evolution.
Yeah.
So let's loop back to the Bijou for a moment. And today, what sort of performances take place there?
On a smaller scale, we're the home of the Symphony's Chamber Orchestra plays there. The Knoxville Jazz Orchestra does 4 performances a year. University of Tennessee Opera Companies. But we also do concerts, comedy, a little bit of dance. We don't do films at the Bijou, or we do maybe 1 or 2 a year.
Seating, what, 600, 700?
750.
Uh-huh. Here, again, 1,600?
Yeah. So the Bijou, the lobby experience isn't like the Tennessee's, but you get in the auditorium at the Bijou, and then you go, wow, this mm-hmm. is just a cool little theater.
Do Knoxville residents realize and appreciate the treasures that they have? They don't take it for granted.
They don't take it for granted. That's the beauty is, I think that when they raise the $30 million to redo this place, the Tennessee, and then the Bijou closed in 2004, reopened it back in 2006, people were like, we have these 2 treasures of theaters that are complementary to each other and that that are a lot of towns don't have anymore because they've knocked them down.
And you almost did.
Yeah, we almost, both of them almost got knocked down. But we were lucky enough that we had people in the community that said, these are vital to us. Even when there was nothing going on downtown, they had the vision to say, this is going to mean something someday. And it really does now.
A true legacy.
Yeah.
So here we are, 2019, coming into summer. Looking near term, what are some of the coolest performances on your slate?
Broadway coming up. We've got Finding Neverland, second weekend in June. We've got a double bill, 31st, I'm With Her and Shovels and Rope. They're two, they probably would call it the Americana genre. They both have sold out the Bijou down the street, and they're coming to, they're on a tour now together.
To learn more, where would somebody go?
TennesseeTheater.com, spell it with the R-E, not E-R, and the Bijou is knoxbijou.org. And my name is Tom Bug, and I'm the general manager.
Tom, what a pleasure to visit with you. Thanks for the wonderful morning in the theater.
Thank you so much for coming. My favorite part of my job is showing off these theaters.
When you see something like an Urban Outfitters develop on Market Square, you realize other organizations, other big chains are seeing Knoxville and going, there's something happening there. There's a brewery out of Asheville that's just done the same thing. So when an Asheville brewery says we need to be in Knoxville, it says something.
The only problem with that is success can breed over-success.
Yes.
My mom lives north of Austin. I spend a lot of time in and out of Austin.
Right.
And it's like, I love it. I've always loved it for decades. But it's like, get me out of here. And one of the disconnects is just gridlock.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's your only risk, that you guys have to find a way to not go too viral.
To not go too far.
Yeah.
And there are some things that are almost out of your control, you know, when it comes to that. And we see it, and locals talk about that, like, you know, are we going to become one of those cities where locals don't even come downtown because they don't want to fight it, they don't want to, you know, be in the middle of the traffic and that kind of thing. It's not a problem yet.
It's one of those things that sneaks up on you.
It does.
In the here and now, you can't imagine that happening.
And we couldn't imagine what it is like it is today, 10 years ago. Nobody would have thought it. Nobody would have imagined all the offerings and things that we have here and people coming all over for a music festival that, you know, this weekend with Rhythm and Blooms. It's hard to imagine because that festival didn't exist 10 years ago either. So there really has been probably a 10-year just swing to make Knoxville a popular destination. And I think even that urban wilderness development has had a huge impact. The south side of the river has developed mainly because of outdoor adventure. Restaurants, breweries, we have like 16-plus breweries now.
A realtor was telling me yesterday that the price of housing in that little corridor jumped like 7 to 10% in the last 12 months because of that urban trail.
Yes. And there's new build there, and there's just historic renovation there. So you go over there, and it's just, it's phenomenal what has happened. And that area has really just taken off. That the Baker Creek area that's part of the urban wilderness features the region's only double black diamond mountain bike trail.
Wow.
So
that sounds deadly.
I don't get on it. I walked it. That's about as far as I was going to go. But you can go over there on any given day and you're going to see license plates from, you know, all over the region, all over the country coming in to ride that trail.
This land is your land and this land is my land.
We're with Carol Evans, Executive Director of the Legacy Parks Foundation. How cool.
It is cool. I feel very, very lucky to have this job.
Yeah, I'll say. Tell us about a mission statement.
We kind of say three things. Legacy Parks conserves natural resources, connects communities, and creates public places. So what that means is we help build parks, trails, open space, conserve land. When you mention legacy, we're seeing more and more of that land, generational transitions where kids don't want their parents' farm. So we're seeing more and more of that occur these days, and it really is, we become the legacy for those families, you know, in many ways. So we're seeing.
So it's kind of a win-win, best use. And you help them maximize maybe tax benefits and whatnot to make it worthwhile for them.
It is about the tax benefit, but what we see more and more with that kind of, they just want something good done with their land. I was saying earlier, you know, land is just incredibly personal.
Let's rewind earlier today. We just went on a fairly long, short walk hike through a wilderness in the middle of town. That's incredible. Tell us about that.
That's it. Knoxville's urban wilderness is something we're pretty proud of where we are with that now. But it was the idea that truly in the heart of Knoxville, we have about 1,000 acres of forests, parks, Civil War sites, all literally in the heart of our city, 2 miles from Market Square, which is a great entertainment hub for Knoxville. So how do you, we began about 7-8 years ago to say, gosh, how do we connect and access and bring people into this urban wilderness area? And we've done that through a system of trails, by connecting parks, by accessing private land, by just creating this network that allowed you to get into this system and truly be able to feel like you're out in the middle of the wilderness, you know, 10 minutes from downtown.
Yeah, I was uncanny. I mean, if I didn't even know how I knew, but if you didn't tell me over the hill was a town, I never would have known it.
Right, and it's very diverse. So we were in the area today that sort of felt like Indiana Jones and Old Rock Quarry.
I was looking for monkeys.
Probably. We saw snakes. We did see a snake. Had we gone about a mile and crossed the road, we would have been in this beautiful rolling farmland with acres and acres of sunflowers. Then we would have crossed another trail and been in a hardwood forest. So the diversity of the experience is like literally right there.
The Legacy Parks Foundation, again, as we alluded to, is a model that works beyond a city, would work in any community in America. Do you ever present, consult, and talk about this in other communities around America?
We do. We've been asked to talk in other, and it's very flattering. And I always say, what worked for us is. So I like the caveat. But why it is incredibly collaborative, and it is looking at land a little bit differently. As I said, you know, remnant land is great land for us. Undevelopable land is great land for us.
Well, some of the terrain we were on is so steep, nobody could ever develop
it.
You're
exactly right, and it is looking at it differently. And our first donation of land was an acre and a half, but it allowed for a skate park to occur. So small parcels, remnant parcels, all of that, I think every community has that. It's just looking at it kind of different. I think probably what also is about our urban wilderness and urban wilderness is we have been able to introduce people to the wilderness who would never otherwise do that, because you really can stop and be in the woods on your way home from work, after school. And so
that happen a lot?
It does. And I'll get an email that says, thank you so much. My kids I took them out there this weekend and they thought they had done the most amazing thing in the world. And they really walked that 1 mile that we did today and thought they had, you know, trekked through the Smokies. So the ease of access is what we find the most rewarding about what we've done. And people do things they never thought they could do. And they walk out of a 2 mile hike and think, I'm coming back. I did that. I can do that again. And I do think because it is so accessible and you don't have to spend all day getting somewhere that scares you.
Minutes away from a lot of people's homes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is exactly right. And then the other part of it is, you know, then they own it and they get it. And that's part of their wilderness. And so it has become an incredible community asset. And the other thing that I think we really try to do is make it for a real diversity of users. So we have adventure playgrounds. We have as many hikers and runners as we have bikers. We have paddling. We really committed to a trail system that accommodated all levels of users because we thought that was really important. And we'd never done it before, but it's nice to see that it is working.
Do you do annual creative events that bring people down here to the center to introduce them that might not know about this any other way?
We do a few events. We do a big event in the fall. I have to say what has been also equally rewarding is to see private enterprise thrive around this. And businesses...
Example.
Well, there's 12 new businesses that have incubated because of the trails, because of the urban wilderness, with, I think, 4 more on the horizon.
They would be outfitters?
Outfitters, breweries, coffee shops, a new market is going in down there, restaurants, condominiums, lots of Airbnb in and around the trails. There's a Facebook site, just houses in the urban wilderness for sale. So really saying, I want to live in the urban wilderness.
That's really cool. So that's economic development.
Yes.
Spinoff.
Yes.
Is really cool. And the best kind.
And we can quantify the economic benefit, which has been helpful for us with the business community and with getting funding for this, because we can say this is the impact. We'd mentioned that housing prices around the area have gone up 7% last year. one particular neighborhood has no housing stock. You're on a waiting list to try to buy a home in that area. We can point out specifically this is what it's done for our community, so which just gathers in more and more and more support for what you do. So we're fortunate to be able to show the economic benefit of these trails and the whole system. What's been interesting to see, also because they're resulting from the urban wilderness, is there's just a different mindset. Like, we now consider ourselves an outdoor city when we didn't think that way 5 years ago, 6 years ago. We'll hear people say, this is a really cool outdoor city, but all of it was here. We didn't make anything up. You know, it's figuring out how to take advantage of what you have. And, you know, we're beginning to do work along the river. We don't think of ourselves as a river city, but...
And yet Tennessee River is a major
arterial
river in America.
Right. Tennessee River rides right through our downtown. Holston and the French Broad formed the Tennessee River actually begins in Knoxville, and we don't own that. And so, you know, I think so there's, in addition to the urban wilderness, there's opportunities for us really to own our outdoor amenities in a better way.
Carol Evans, for further information, to somebody who wanted to learn more, what would they do?
Contact Legacy Parks at legacyparks.org, and we'll be happy to talk to you about any of that we're doing here.
Oh, and is Facebook one of your great tools of communication?
Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those things.
Carol Evans, Executive Director, Legacy Parks Foundation. It's been an honor and a pleasure to visit with you.
Thanks so much. Great afternoon.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks for the hype.
There's been a lot of contributors to the success of Knoxville over the past few years, and we even talked about the culinary scene. We have chefs here who have Blackberry Farm experience and background and training that came home to Knoxville. We have Knoxville chefs that said, I want to get out of here, and then went, no, I want to come back. And so now they're, you know, they're popping up all over with phenomenal restaurants. So a lot of contributors to make us popular, and we hope we don't outgrow that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Good size that we're at.
Yeah, perfect size. It's almost too good to be true.
It is almost too good to be true. Yeah, yeah,
it's
exactly.
Very
right.
Cool. Are there any things that would serve as a model for other cities and towns that wish they had your momentum? Key to the magic.
I will tell you the one thing that comes to mind is collaboration. I'm constantly amazed working in the position I do to see how our attractions work together, to see how our museums work together, to see how our restaurant, the chefs are so supportive of each other. The breweries, actually this weekend kicks off Knox Craft Beer Week, and they will release a collaborative beer at all the breweries together this week. People genuinely want to see Knoxville succeed.
So it really is a consensus and everybody working as a team.
Everybody on board, and that's not easily done. We're lucky that as an organization for tourists and bringing not just tourists, but bringing conferences and events like Bassmaster and USA Cycling and those things to Knoxville, we're very fortunate to have the partnership of, you know, our city, our state, our county, but also the University of Tennessee and partnerships with the Chamber. And everybody wants to be part of this, and that makes it a lot easier.
Is there a friendly relationship, Chamber and Visitors Bureau? How do you guys work real closely together?
We work so well together. Yes. Like I said earlier, the Visitors and Relocation Guide is the prime example of that. And we have the opportunity to do a few things together that we realize there's synergy there when we can come together and communicate the same message. Because living here, establishing business here, visiting here, all have similar benefits.
David Butler, here we are in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we're in an art gallery, but it's more than a gallery, isn't it?
I like to think so. We're very much about this place and this part of the world and historically what's happening here now in terms of visual culture. We keep discovering that it's a really dense, layered, interesting, rich story.
I find fascinating what you were talking about earlier before we started this interview, how when you started this museum, you believed you had to find the major artists from around the world, around the country, and there's been a reset.
Right, it was a big box kind of deal, and it's 180 degrees different now. And I really think it's because this community has changed, the world has changed. I think this has happened in lots of places where we've learned to value and treasure what's local and what's indigenous and what's authentic and what comes out of the ground right here. It's been fun to watch that happen.
Could be a Tennessean that went to Paris. They might not have lived here all their lives, but there is inevitably that connection.
Yes. Most of the work we show has some connection with this part of the world. And sometimes it doesn't. We're not confined. I'm looking at a really wonderful painting by a young Romanian artist, which we came about in an unlikely set of coincidences, but it works for us.
Mm-hmm. Did you acquire that?
Yeah, it's ours. And we had shown through a connection in New York a show of artists that grew up under communism in Eastern Europe and are working now and kind of how that colored what they did. So I like to think of us as a mirror that reflects who we are, but a window that we can see other things through. So,
do you do thematic shows periodically that take up and take down a lot of art to make it work for that show?
Yeah, we do a lot of that. It might be things we draw from the collection. It might be connected to an artist that we show all the time. It might be something that's completely unconnected. We just think it's interesting and worth seeing.
Going forward, as a center for art, that the real mission is the upcoming generation to make sure they get it and carry that forward. So you have ongoing programs you do with schools.
We do tons of stuff with school kids in the whole region. One of our big projects every year is a 30-county regional student show. Schools kind of do their own curating and juring, and they submit work. We have about 1,000 works submitted, out of which we can show maybe 250, 300. And they're professionally juried. It really means something. There's no participation prize for this one. You have to be pretty good, I think, from 6th grade up to 12th grade. That's been a real boon for us. And it's a way of recognizing those kids who really don't get recognized very much.
You were telling me earlier you have outreach programs where you bring an artist into the classroom and they do hands-on work.
We do a lot of hands-on here at the building, but even more off-site. And we really focus on schools that don't have any resources. I feel like it's a way that we can actually make things a little bit better.
I remember going to the Art Museum in Mobile, Alabama, and in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the university, and both those heads said they had programs where they bring in Alzheimer's people because they know and they've seen how art helps.
Yeah.
Do you do anything
we
like
do
that?
We do a lot of that. It's interesting. We found that ways of talking about art for people with memory issues, with dementia, work really well for everybody. You just kind of slow down and focus on one thing in a very kind of slow, gentle way, in a way we don't do very often.
You physically watched it work.
Yes, I kind of watched from a distance. There's a lot of work being done now with music and people with dementia, but visual things and oral things are buried way down there, and it seems to be the last thing to go for a lot of people. That's been a fun area of endeavor for us and a lot of other art museums too.
Part of that primary mission for you is making art relevant to as many people as you can.
Yeah, again, I think that's happening everywhere. I feel like here we have a particular calling to make what we do as accessible and as welcoming and remove as many barriers as we can. We'll never get that 100% right, but we're a lot better at it than we used to be, I think.
And that being said, we've both been to a lot of art museums where the cost of entry was a literal barrier, especially families, 3-4 kids. It's a deal breaker.
Yeah, we dropped our admission charge a long time ago. I like to say we don't ask for money when you first walk in. We get to know you. And we found when we did that people, if they're not required to pay something, they happily leave a donation. They spend money in the shop. It just makes for a much friendlier, more welcoming conversation at the front door.
So it works for you.
It works really well for us. I'm a big missionary for free admissions in museums.
That's really cool. Any other kind of missions and passions and things in your world that you would like to share?
I like the fact that what we have on the walls here, it kind of reflects the beauty of this area. This is a gorgeous corner of the world. I love driving home at night, seeing the Smoky Mountains on the horizon. It's fun to watch people connect with art, which people don't do naturally. We think they do, but they really don't. But because of the focus on local content, local artists, people connect it in a way just because of geography. It's as simple as that.
Have you watched locals from the region come to see their own backyard in a new lens?
Exactly.
Because
Yeah, and it's nice to see people make those connections. It's a very non-threatening, very friendly process.
For further information,
go to our website, knoxart.org. Everything you want to know is there. There are lots of resources there. It's a pretty deep, broad source of information. See what's coming up here. My name is David Butler, Executive Director of the Knoxville Museum of Art.
David, thanks again. Okay, I kind of noticed the doggies rule here.
Knoxville has gone to the dogs, and we're really happy.
But as they're walking around town, they have this really confident little gait, you know, like, oh, this is my town.
They rule down here. I've got to tell you, there's actually kind of a backstory with that. Radio Systems Pet Safe is based in Knoxville. So invisible fencing and all
right,
that stuff
yeah.
for pets has been around
That's
for a long, long time. They're based here in Knoxville.
Wow.
So we have 7 dog parks that are pet safe dog parks around the city, county. We have little dog parks. We have big dog parks. And for a long time, the push for Knoxville was to be seen as the most dog-friendly city in America.
Wow.
And so now...
So the dogs were doing this.
Oh yeah, the dogs were doing it. They were campaigning. They had their own social media and everything.
Yeah.
And then... The push now has kind of become a statewide push for Tennessee to be seen that way, but Knoxville is really the leader for it. Mm-hmm. We have dog-specific events. We have a Mardi Growl parade, and there's a ton of people that come out with their dogs all dressed up. We have an event coming up, actually, in a few weeks that is Bike, Boat, Brew, and Bark. And so it's a pet-friendly event down on the water, and people see it when they're visiting here, and they need to know ahead of time you can bring your pet. We have hotels that it's not an issue. We have hotels that are going to allow you to bring your dog. We have restaurants that are going to put a bowl of water out for your dog on the patio. You can have, you know, dining on the patio with your dog. We have shops that are not going to blink twice when you walk in the door with your dog. It's amazing. And you'll see a lot of pet-friendly stickers. Our visitor center is dog-friendly. There's never a day that I'm out and there's not a good number of dogs walking down the street. And people are responsible about it, too. The streets stay clean. That's all I'm going to say about that. So the dog-friendliness, even the urban wilderness, the trails, you can take your dog on a trail. Now, that's different from a national park.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. And I've seen dogs out on the water on paddle boards and things like that as well. So it's a great city. If you've got a dog with you and that's your child, know that that child's going to be welcome here as well.
Any more?
If you ask me for one more thing, I would probably throw out First Friday. That's something a lot of communities are familiar with. It's an arts and cultural event that takes place really across the country, but Knoxville's been doing it for a number of years. On the first Friday of every month, this city, this downtown, is even more alive than it is right now, if you can imagine it. The art galleries open. We have artist showings in a number of places. So even like a room at the Bijou is going to be open to the public with an artist showing there. Coffee shops will have artist showings. And then live music in some of these places. You're going to walk in and find a jazz trio playing in the art market gallery down the street. But what I love about it, it's such a diverse night. You come downtown and you'll see all variety of families, all variety of cultures. It's just a beautiful mix as people come out with, you know, their kids, with their pets, and just experience a beautiful side of Knoxville. We have a ton of amazing local artists that are part of our maker community, which is something I haven't talked about either, but we are a maker city. There's a number of artists and fabricators and creators here that have collaborated together, and you can look up Maker City for Knoxville and you'll learn more about that. But when you come out that night and you can watch a mural being completed, or you can see artists in action down the artist alley behind Market Square, which is an area just for muralists to come and work, it's a beautiful time to be downtown. So if you're planning a trip and you are close to being a First Friday, plan around that First Friday for Knoxville.
I love that alley. I went in there and I'm going, oh my gosh, I couldn't stop taking photos.
Yeah, it's so nice that the city allows that. And we've got a lot of public art around the city. We've been very fortunate to have a lot of our art community embraced that way, and they love it here.
Okay, well, we'll see you in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yay! I love it. Please come visit.
I don't want to leave. Okay, I'm serious.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.